Dan Murray in Snowbird. When a man arranges a marriage between his niece and a wealthy old man, he doesn't realize he's arranging a tragedy. That's the tale on the CBS Radio Mystery Theater tonight at 11:08, Till Death Do Us Join, right here on KOIN in Portland. It's 11 o'clock.
Vietnam's president makes a speech in Saigon offering to resign in favor of a leader acceptable to communist forces surrounding the city. This is Doug Poling reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Details on the speech reported by Peter Collins in Saigon.
It was an emotional moment, a crisis that decides the fate of a nation. In bright sunlight here in Saigon, the ailing 72-year-old president of South Vietnam, Son Van Hoon, stepped out of a limousine and walked slowly with the aid of a cane toward a podium set up in front of the Senate building. He nodded feebly toward the red and gold South Vietnamese flag held by an honor guard as the national anthem was played. Then President Hoon limped into the building and in a brief speech told the joint session of the House and Senate that he would not resign and that it was not in his power to shatter the Constitution by naming retired General Dung Van Ninh as president, and through him, handing power to the communists. Addressing three generals by name and tapping his cane for emphasis on the floor of the Senate building, President Hoon said he had sworn to uphold the Constitution, and if the generals wanted him out of the way, they simply had to put a bullet through his ear. He then invited the assembly to authorize him to stay on as president and form a new government to negotiate with the communists. There was little clear indication of how the vote would go, but a number of members said they would support President Hoon and the Constitution. Authoritative official sources here say that if the vote goes against General Ninh and the communists, this could set off an immediate attack on Saigon by more than 10 North Vietnamese divisions now ringing the city. Peter Collins, CBS News, Saigon.
Former President Nguyen Van Thieu of South Vietnam has arrived in Nationalist China, flying into Taiwan on a special U.S. aircraft Saturday. Thieu, who resigned last Monday, arrived with 15 companions and 10 tons of baggage. More news in a moment.
If you ever use a hemorrhoid preparation, you should know this. Vaseline Brands has news. It's Hemorrhoid Ointment. Hemorrhoid works fast, helps protect with a proven medical ingredient for soothing occlusion. And Hemorrhoid gives you only this key ingredient, so it gives you more than the leading preparation. Now at your first sign of pain, burning, and itching, turn to soothing Hemorrhoid. Hemorrhoid from Vaseline Brands. Use only as directed.
I've tried, but I can't find a decent job.
There must be one person I can hire with the qualifications I'm looking for. But where is he?
Last year, Job Service brought over 4 million people and jobs together. In 40 years, we've never charged a fee. Call Job Service.
We're working to get people working. Jobs for people. People for jobs.
For Job Service, contact your state employment service. A message on behalf of the U.S. Department of Labor.
A 34-year-old Richmond, Virginia man who apparently had been drinking hijacked a United Airlines jetliner Friday night and ordered it to go to Cuba. The plane, United Flight 344 from Raleigh, North Carolina to Newark, New Jersey, was hijacked in flight, a male passenger claiming he had a bomb. The plane landed in Atlanta to refuel. 66 persons, all the other passengers and the crew members, slipped off the plane, leaving just the hijacker aboard. FBI agents entered the plane and arrested the man, identified as Francis Covey. Officials said the man told them he wanted to see Fidel Castro. Several passengers said the man was drunk when he boarded the plane in Raleigh. In a speech Friday night at the Yale University Law School, President Ford proposed a number of reforms to cut down crime, including mandatory prison terms for all those convicted of violent crime. The president also said the nation has suffered the national disgrace of lawbreaking in high places. In Oklahoma City Friday, former Governor David Hall of Oklahoma was sentenced to 3 years in prison. Hall was convicted in a bribery extortion case involving the investment of $10 million in state pension funds. A co-defendant, Dallas financier W.W. Taylor, was sentenced to 18 months. Now this.
As a busy mother, Mrs. Bavardo has no time for pain.
I have three very, very active children. And on many occasions, I get headaches. Anacin gives me very fast relief.
Right, Mrs. Pavardos. While all three leading pain relievers reach an effective level in your bloodstream in minutes, in the final analysis, only Anacin hits and holds the highest level.
And with Anacin, I have my headache gone and I have no upset stomach.
Next headache, take Anacin for a higher level of pain reliever. Take only as directed.
As a teacher and a mother, one thing I've learned is that children love animals. Whether it's bow wow, quack quack, or gobble gobble, they love them all. My children are too young to know what whales are yet, but they will one day, and they've got a right to have them in their world. That's one reason I've joined the National Audubon Society's campaign to help save the whales. You can join, too. Write National Audubon Society, 950 3rd Avenue, New York, New York.
Radio Uganda reports that President Idi Amin was disappointed when he found no public monuments to Adolf Hitler during his recent visit to West Germany. Amin is reported to have been so let down that he will build a monument to Hitler in his own country. Amin, the controversial Muslim head of Uganda's government, stirred up a storm 3 years ago when he said publicly Hitler was right in ordering the extermination of millions of Jews. Doug Poling, CBS News.
45-year-old Arnold Maxwell Harris of Drain is held on $30,000 bail as the search continues for one of the two teenagers he is accused of attempting to abduct. 17-year-old Russell Smith of Cottage Grove disappeared in an area about 12 miles west of Lorain Thursday, and a companion, 18-year-old Ronald Riccola, also of Cottage Grove, says Harris had fired several shots at both of them. Riccola told officers he did not know how many shots were fired in the kidnap attempt or if Smith was hit by one of the bullets. The Columbia River Estuary Task Force has approved hiring a Portland consulting firm, Wilsey and Ham, to assist in an overall estuary management plan. The task force says the study will be hopefully financed with $5,000 it expects in federal revenue. Oregon's two Republicans split their votes when the Senate, by a 46-17 vote, passed the conference report allocating $327 million in aid to South Vietnam. Mark Hatfield was one of the five Republicans voting against the measure, while Bob Packwood was one of the 15 Republicans voting for it. Three young women employees of Ginger's Sexy Saunas have lost their bids to have their convictions overturned for practicing massage without a license in Portland. Circuit Judge Richard Burke imposed fines of $255 each against Marion Ramona Rector, age 19, and 18-year-old Jenny Mae Dvorak, and 21-year-old Susan Patricia McGinnis of Milwaukee. The women were convicted in district court in February and were retried before Burke on appeal. The weather for the Portland metropolitan area: fair through Saturday, mostly cloudy on Sunday, warmer Saturday with the high 60 to 65 degrees, cooling to 55 to 60 on Sunday. Lows tonight 35 to 40, 40 to 45 Saturday night. Chance of measurable rainfall 30% tonight, decreasing to 10% through Saturday. Right now in downtown Portland, it's 45 degrees. That's KOIN News to 1108. I'm Bill Garrity.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. Not many people, I suppose, remember the name of the writer Joseph Sheridan Le Fanu. Yet among fans of the Gothic tale, he is considered by many as the equal of the great masters such as Poe, Stevenson, and de Maupassant. Judge for yourself as you listen to perhaps his greatest short story, grisly, ghoulish, and inexpressibly haunting.
Not in the bed. Hold the lamp higher. She's not in the room.
The window. Could she have fallen or jumped?
The shutters are closed. The latch still thrown. There.
Can you see anything, Shulkin?
No, Herr Bookman. The street is empty. The canal is smooth as glass. She's gone. Rose is gone, as if she'd never returned.
Our mystery drama, Till Death Do Us Join, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Ian Martin and stars Don Scardino and Roberta Maxwell. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, Brewers of Budweiser. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Young I may be, but still I'm a man. Just turned 18 and I'll do what I can to find me a place where I can be me. Get ready for life and be free and see. Where do I go from here? Oh, where do I go from here? I finished school, but what lies ahead? Don't want to get trapped, want to feel free instead. All over the world, there's so much to do. The call of the sea, don't you hear it too? Where do I go from here? Oh, where do I go from here?
What about the new Navy? Get your chance at success, learn an exciting job, and see the world. Call toll-free 800-841-8000. That's 800-841-8000. Or see your Navy recruiter. Be someone special in a new Navy.
I know where I'm going from here.
Hi, this is Jose Feliciano, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Louis Braille Foundation for Blind Musicians, a national nonprofit organization working to promote the interests of the blind in the field of music. The foundation exists to help talented blind musicians achieve professional status as performers and teachers, providing them with auditions, evaluations, and counseling, paid engagements to qualified musicians, and the transcription of music into Braille. The services of the Louis Braille Foundation are available to any blind person. The foundation depends entirely on your contributions. So please help. Send your tax-deductible gifts to the Louis Braille Foundation, 112 East 19th Street, New York, 10003. Help a blind musician on his way. Thank you.
I come home in the evening.
Of all the painting he must have done in his solitary lifetime, there exists today, in remarkable condition, only one canvas of Godfrey Shulkin's, pupil of Gerard Bookman, who in turn was a pupil of the great Rembrandt. The picture represents a chamber in some antique religious building. Its foreground is occupied by a young woman of startling beauty, her face illuminated by a strange smile, half lovely, half evil. In the background is the shadowy form of a man dressed in the old Flemish fashion, propped up in a coffin, as though in a bed. A fascinating picture, and a chilling one. No one who views it can repress a shudder. Why? On the back of the canvas is a legend, written in cramped longhand by the painter, which may serve to explain why.
They think me boorish, rude, and laugh at my slovenly ways and filthy habits. But they buy my pictures, for I am an artist beyond peer. My whole life I have devoted to trying to forget what I once was. The only life I have had is canvas and pigments and a search for escape in the only fashion I can accomplish it. Once I was young as other men, with a bright future in my chosen profession, full of laughter and joy and madly in love. Oh, there were barriers to overcome, impossible heights to scale, but with the hope and optimism of youth, I knew I could win out. How could I know that a force beyond any human strength would strangle my spirit, twist and deform my soul, and doom me to a lifetime of despair?
Rose.
We are alone, beloved.
All the other students are gone.
And Herr Buchmann?
He left the studio for home less than 5 minutes ago.
I know. I only wanted to be sure I had made no mistake.
How do you know?
I had Jacob, the groom, drive me into Amsterdam today to shop for some silks. On the way back, I had him stop at his favorite Bierstube to have a beer and groom the horses, whilst I took a stroll along the canal. I was hoping to catch you alone at the studio, and my prayers were answered when I saw my uncle climb into his carriage and drive off.
My dearest one, if only I could declare my love for you openly.
Oh, you will be famous very soon, and we are still young. We have time.
Every moment spent away from you is an eternity.
It is just as bad for me. But for the moment, we must live with it. Come, let me see what you have been working on, my genius.
No, it is in no shape. I cannot make it come right, and it is still only a sketch.
But, Godfrey, you are wrong. The conception is beautiful, and even the freehand outline tells all the world you are a master. Or to become one.
Tells all the world. Well, perhaps you are right. For you are all my world. If whatever I do satisfies you, it would be reward enough.
Oh, no. We must do better than that so that we can have each other. Finish this one as you have started, and I will see that Uncle Gerard gets the canvas to the right places. Once someone buys you, you will become a vogue. I know it. I feel it in my... in my bones.
Not in your heart?
In my heart, what I feel is my love for a man named Godfrey Shalkin.
Will I ever be rich enough to make you my wife?
Hold me, Godfrey. Hold me very tight.
Rose. Rose.
I want to believe. Help me to.
In every way I can.
Oh.
But what happened?
I don't know. A sudden chill, as if... the time. I must go. I would do nothing to set Manea Buchmann against us.
Why can't I just go to him?
No, I beg you. I know my uncle. He would only send you away, and then you would have lost everything. Me, his teaching, your future. Hush, my darling. Trust in God. And let us hope. I love you. I shall always love you. God give you grace.
What grace has a God who keeps two lovers apart? Heaven forgive me. I meant it not. But the words had been said and could not be taken back. I turned to my sketch, one of the temptations of St. Anthony by the devil. I set to work and was so busily engaged that an hour or so must have passed. The light was gone. As I sat back, I heard a sort of sniff behind me. A few feet behind me stood the figure of an elderly man in a cloak and a broad-brimmed conical hat. The room was so dark by now that the shadow from his hat obscured his features entirely. But I was impressed, awed at the perfect stone-like stillness of the figure. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you come in.
This is the studio of Gerard Buchmann.
It is. Will you sit, Mynheer?
No. I wish to talk to him.
He has returned to his home some hours past. If you would wish to seek him there...
No. Will you see him before tomorrow evening?
Oh, yes, sir. I am one of his pupils, and he will be here by late morning to commence his classes.
Are you to be trusted with a message?
I hope so.
Fail to deliver it at your peril. Tell Gerard Buchmann that Mynheer van der Huysen of Rotterdam wishes to speak to him here tomorrow evening at exactly 7 in this room on matters of weight.
He turned abruptly and with a quick but utterly silent step quit the room. Some strange premonition drew me to the window through which I could see the exit door to the street bordering the canal. I waited in vain for him to appear. The darkness was now gathering in earnest. Leaving the studio and locking the door, I half expected to find him lurking in the halls below. But he had vanished,
as mysteriously and completely as he had first appeared. Nor was the mysterious stranger further identified when I reported him to Mynheer Bookman the following noon.
Vanderhausen? Vanderhausen. No, his name means nothing to me. From Rotterdam, you say?
He said.
Yes. Well, we shall wait for the appointed hour, and in the meanwhile, to work. I have looked at your sketches on the temptation of St. Anthony. The lion, the chiaroscuro, the coloration are acceptable, well done and conceived. But the expressions, it's as if St. Anthony were the devil and the devil the saints. What is your conception? Why?
Your Honor, I cannot answer. I do not know.
Well, the other pupils are arriving. Now let's see if your conception can improve during class studies. So, my poor Sharkin. The others are all gone, and I had little time for you today. Ah, how went the canvas?
I don't know, Master. I found it hard to concentrate.
So did I. Let's forget pigment and brushes a while and join me in a glass of brandy. It's been a long, hard day, and I have some strange premonition. This visitor you tell me to expect bears some ill tidings. Well, at all events, let's fortify ourselves against ill chance. Your health.
Your health.
At 7, you said.
He said.
Vanderhausen. Never heard of the man. What can he want of me? A portrait? A poor relation to be apprenticed? A collection to be evaluated?
Well, you should soon learn. The Stadthaus is sounding the hour. I should leave.
No. Stay with me, Godfrey. You're young and strong. And for some reason, I have a foreboding about this mysterious appointment. No, the clock has ceased. I shall not wait too long for...
He seems to be here, sir.
I'll go. Let him in.
By your leave, young sir. You are Gerard Bookman?
I am. I have the honor to address Mynheer Vanderhausen of Rotterdam.
The same.
I understand your worship wished to meet with me, and I'm here, as you see, by your appointment.
It is well. Is that a man of trust?
Well, he's my prized pupil, of course.
Yes. Well, then let him take this box of leather and get the nearest jeweler or goldsmith to value its contents.
Why?
That I will explain to you alone. But I wish him to return with a certificate of the value of the contents.
That is a strange request, Mynheer. May I ask the reason?
When we are alone.
And I think Jan Spuiten in the next street will still be open. Godfrey, will you gratify the gentleman's wish?
Your wish, sir. I will take as little time as I can. I had in my hands a small leather case, about 9 inches square, surprisingly heavy for its size. I was less curious about its contents than the conversation I was about to miss. If I could even have dreamed of its subject and the consequences, but how could I? Instead of clairvoyance, I reacted normally to my master's order and sought the information I had been asked to get. Godfrey Shalkin, pupil of Master Gerard Bookman.
Were it not for your master's good offices and the designs he presents me with, neither God nor the devil would persuade me to open up at this late hour. Well, what is it, young sir?
My master bid me bring the contents of this leather case to you for evaluation.
That scuffed and crumbling jewel box? What nonsense. Still, by its antiquity, it's curious and challenging. Come in, by all means. The wind makes enemies of my old bones. What is the
urgency that prompts this haste?
I know not, Mynheer Spuyten.
Well, then let me see. Give me the case. Good Lord.
What is it?
A moment. My loop and my scale so I can examine and weigh. Gold ingots. If they say it true, this is a king's ransom, young man.
If Godfrey Shulkin had only known or guessed, he might have been tempted to seize the fortune in gold ingots and bury it in Amsterdam's deepest canal. For the contents of that scuffed, scraped case, soiled with age, were to turn his life about and transform him from a young, carefree man to the bitter, hating wretch who painted with the flair of the gods. I'll be back shortly with Act Two.
Inside you're free. Inside you're free after all. You hear freedom's spirit like a wild bird's call. Inside you're free. Inside you're free after all. Living free. Living free.
There's a long stretch of open road before you. You're at the controls of a Buick Century, a really fine mid-sized car. Comfort abounds. A sophisticated suspension system is smoothing the way. An underhood, a frugal V6 engine economically goes about its business. You're happy, you're free, and you're in a Buick.
Inside you're free. Inside you're free after all.
What are you building with your blocks?
I want to make a world bigger than me.
Oh, well, it looks pretty good.
Yep, except it needs more blocks.
Well, what are you putting into your world?
Trees and stores and garages.
Is there anything that you're not going to put into your world?
Hats.
No hats?
Because I'm not going to put any rain in this world.
Oh.
So nobody needs hats.
Dave, it's getting pretty big.
It's already as tall as me.
Uh-oh. Oh.
Okay.
Your world fell apart?
Yep, except I'm going to build it again.
And what kind of world are you going to build next?
A world that don't ever fall down.
You can build a better world, too. Just begin.
Can you give me that block, please?
From the Franciscans, with love.
While Godfrey Shulkin was learning from the goldsmith the incredible value of the contents of the leather case, a conversation was taking place between the mysterious stranger and his master. A conversation concerned with the girl he loved, Rose Welderkraust, Bookman's niece. A conversation that established those golden ingots not as a king's ransom, but a queen's.
Herr Bookman, I will be free with you. I cannot, by limitations, I dare not discuss, tarry with you long.
Well, surely I can offer you a drink?
No.
Some refreshment, food?
No.
Well, at least let me raise the lights.
No.
Or divest you of your outer garment.
No.
I can feed the fire more logs to warm you.
I have no need of your offers, nor desire of them. I come to make you an offer.
And will you come to the fire and sit?
I prefer to stand where I am. The shadows suit me well.
I don't understand.
Some time ago, I saw you in the Church of St. Lawrence in Rotterdam. With you was a young girl of exceptional beauty, whom I later ascertained was your niece. I desire to marry her.
Without meeting her, conversing with her, just from one glimpse?
That was enough to convince me she was the woman I desire to share my future with.
But Rose...
If I can satisfy you, that I am wealthier than any husband you could ever dream for her, I expect that you, Herr Buckman, will forward my suit with your authority. And I must add that if you are to approve my proposal, it must be here and now, for I can brook no delays.
You're extremely arbitrary, Mynheer.
I am constrained to be. I offer no apology.
I did not ask for one.
You might reasonably have. My circumstances are such that I have none to offer.
You must be aware that my niece has a will of her own and may not acquiesce in what we may design for her advantage.
The young man I sent out with a packet will return shortly. That will prove the evidence of my wealth and security for your niece's life. I promise you it will be 10 times the fortune she could expect. All of it in the interest that accrues shall be hers as long as she lives. Can I be more liberal?
Well, if what you tell me is true, of course not.
As to my respectability, you must take that for granted, at least for the present. I buy my name and reputation with what you're about to discover about me. My wealth.
You must give me a moment to think.
I remind you again, my time is limited.
I will not pledge myself unnecessarily.
But you will if it is necessary, and I consider it so. A testy old gentleman determined to have his own way, huh?
Why? Those were the very words
that you were thinking, I know. You also thought to yourself, all things considered, I'm not justified in declining the offer if the gold involved is satisfactory. Am I correct?
You read my mind correctly.
Please forgive the intrusion and my abruptness. But we are both men of sense as well as sensibility. Your niece is penniless. I shall make her as rich, or richer, than a queen. When your young man returns with a valuation, if you don't wish the proposal withdrawn, you must immediately sign this engagement.
Enter. Master, I have brought Mynheer Spuyten's valuation of the contents of the case.
Give them to Mynheer Vanderhausen.
Oh, no. Give them to Mynheer Buckman.
Yes, sir. Here they are, Master.
Gold ingots? The value? I can't believe it.
Neither could Jan Spuyten or myself. I fled back through the streets, searching every shadow. I have never seen so much wealth.
10,000 guilders.
A token only. My wealth is limitless. Will you sign the contract now?
A moment. My eyes are tired and the light is dim.
This youth must witness the contract. Let him read it to you.
Will you, Godfrey?
Yes, Master. This document represents an irrevocable agreement by Gerard Buckman, as guardian at law, to give Wilken Vanderhausen the hand of his niece, Rose Velderkaust.
Go on, boy, go on.
Of his niece, Rose Velderkaust, in marriage within 1 week of the date of this document. In exchange for this covenant, the said Wilken Vanderhausen agrees to provide as a marriage settlement a package of gold ingots.
Don't think it's necessary to read the rest. It's only the jargon of advocates. Mynheer Buckman, I have not tried in any way to stint in my offer. Now, are you, for your niece's sake as well as for your own, content?
Well, I would dearly like perhaps another day to consider.
Not 1 hour.
Very well. I am content. I can scarcely deny my niece her good fortune. Nay, Godfrey?
How can I presume to offer an opinion? Except that Rose, I mean, your Frau Velderkaus, well, should she not be consulted?
A young girl is not the best judge of her future. Rose is my responsibility. Lovely as she is, when could she have such a chance again?
Mynheer Vanderhuizen, I'm content. It is a bargain.
Mm-hmm. And sign at once, I implore you. For I am weary.
Very well.
And now, the witness.
I can't. I won't.
What's this, Godfrey? I've taken you into my studio, supported you, taught you, reared you. How can you refuse me one simple request in return?
I can't. Well, surely, Rose...
There is only one answer, Mynheer Buckman. That young man is as taken with your niece as I am. Very well. Now, would you choose between us? Must we find another witness, or do I take my document and vanish from your life?
Godfrey, how can you think of Rose? You, a painter, an artist. You have your own dedication in a field which may leave you penniless for the rest of your life. If you do truly love Rose, how can you deny her this opportunity?
I love her more than life itself. I want only her happiness.
Then sign.
Master, there is Rose herself.
Rose is not yet ready to know her own mind. I am her guardian. It's my duty to secure her future. If you love my niece, you'll realize it's in her own best interests.
Because I love her, then, I sign.
It is well. I will take the contract, and you keep the gold. I shall visit you at your house tomorrow night at 9 o'clock, my good Mynheer Buckman, to meet formally with the object of the contract.
Again, stiffly, but with the same rapid movement, the shadowed figure was gone so swiftly I had no time to open the door for him. Again, the same unnamed fear drove me to the window to watch for his exit down below. And again, his movement must have been so rapid that I failed to see him leave and enter the street.
Godfrey?
Yes, Master.
I'm sorry. I didn't know that you'd formed an attachment to my niece.
I have no right to.
And I'm glad you're sensible of that. A painter... It's an uneasy life of sacrifice and, most of the time, poverty. So I shall hold my peace till the appointment a week from now. And you will join us at dinner.
Must I?
It will be better for all of us to face and accept the future. Striking 9, Rose. Is all arranged?
As you see, Uncle.
You're a perfect hostess. The fire shines like burnished gold, and the table is set immaculately. Godfrey, a glass of wine?
No, thank you, Master Buckman.
You seem nervous.
I am.
I hope you're not going to lose control of your feelings.
It isn't that, Master.
Then what?
I can't quite explain it. A strange foreboding.
You feel it too.
Does Rose know what the occasion is?
No.
Then it is not too late.
I have signed the contract. My word alone is its bond. But the paper is the final arbiter.
Then there is no escape.
Escape from what? Marriage settlement beyond my wildest dreams for my brother's daughter? I commend you to control your foolish dreams. I've done what must be done. And our guest is here. Rose?
Yes, Uncle?
Come stand by me to greet our visitor.
Yes, Uncle.
This time the room was brightly lighted. This time, the Mynheer had to shed his outer garments. This time, we could see his features for the first time. His undersuit was a rich sable garment, his stockings of dark purple, his feet enclosed in shoes adorned with roses of the same color. His hands were enclosed in gauntlets, his hair long enough to rest on a plaited ruff. So far, all was well. But the face was a bluish, leaden hue, such as metallic medicine sometimes produce. The eyes muddy white and startlingly prominent with the glaze of insanity. And the lips a deep purple, almost black, twisted in a sensual, malignant, almost satanic fashion, such as my unwilling fingers had wanted to trace on the face of my Saint Anthony. The effect was so startling that for a long moment no one could speak. It was as though some devilish humor had dressed a corpse from the grave and invigorated it far enough to walk and talk and enter a room with the living.
One must admit, of course, that Shulkin could scarcely see his rival, or to be more truthful, the man who had stolen his beloved from him, in the best light. The painter's eye tends to exaggerate, or at least translate the human figure into his own design. And jealousy is a poor measure for judgment. When we return shortly with Act Three, we will be able to make our own assessment of this strange and devious story.
When you say but, you've said a lot of things nobody else can say.
A lot of things, like a taste, a smoothness, and a drinkability you'll find in no other beer at any price. Let's say this beer, Budweiser, is the king of beers.
When you say but, you've set the world that means you like to do wrong. When you say but, you say you care enough to only want the king of beers.
Budweiser's always been the king of beers, and always will be, for one simple reason. It's quality taste. That speaks for itself. Hear it talking?
When you say Budweiser, you've said it.
Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis.
Here's a tip from your Better Business Bureau on the metric system. You know, the worldwide trend today is toward a universal system of measurement, the metric system. The names of this new system may sound strange to you at first, but fortunately, there are only a few words that have to be learned for everyday use, and these are the millimeter, centimeter, meter, and kilometer for describing length and distance, the milliliter and liter for capacity or volume, the gram, kilogram, and ton for weight, the kilometer per hour for highway speed, and the degree Celsius or centigrade for temperature. You're already using some of these terms more than you may realize. For example, when you go to the supermarket, you see weights expressed in grams on more and more packaged items. Now, for more information on this whole metric system, write to Metric Information Office, National Bureau of Standards, Washington, D.C. Stranger spoke little during the half hour or so he stayed, nor could his host manage many more words. Such, indeed, was the nervous terror that Vanderhausen inspired that it was an effort not to fly in panic from the room. Something indescribably odd was about him. His movements, as if directed by a spirit unused to managing the machinery of the body. And two things were remarked by all. The fact that his eyelids never closed, and that his chest was motionless, unstirred by the process of respiration. It was with a feeling of infinite relief for all when the door finally closed behind him.
Oh, thank God.
Are you all right, Rose?
No. I feel as chilled as someone with fever.
My dear, don't exaggerate.
I don't. He's a frightful man. I wouldn't see him ever again for all the wealth in the world.
Don't be a foolish girl. A man may be as ugly as the devil, but if his heart is good and his actions match it, he's worth more than some handsome puppy with neither brains nor prospects.
I don't want to talk about him anymore.
But we must. The man is wealthy, liberal, and withal good-hearted. He has sued for you as his bride.
His bride?
It is my duty to see you well bestowed. I promised your father on his deathbed that I would make sure of that.
Uncle, not that man.
Enough for tonight. There are no decisions to make beyond the fact that it is time to retire. Godfrey, I shall see you in the morning.
Yes, Master. Good night, Juffrouw Veldekast.
No need to be so formal. Rose. And good night, Godfrey. Don't look so troubled. Nothing has changed.
My walk home will be lighted by that knowledge. Good night, Master Bookman.
Good night, my boy. And remember, you're an apprentice painter. That is your first and most important loyalty.
I am acutely aware of where I stand, Herr Bookman. Good night.
Why were you so severe with him, Uncle?
Because we live in a world of reality.
What do you mean?
Do you realize that Mynheer Vanderhausen, who visited us tonight, has guaranteed you 10,000 guilders of your own as an earnest of his love and admiration for you? I have them here.
10,000 guilders?
It's his way of saying how much he loves you. Love, for all its charms, is not the most important thing in the world. You will marry Mynheer Vanderhausen according to the contract.
The mood of hope that my beloved had kindled in me barely lasted till my return home to the bare and cheerless garret I lived in. Even if in my sleepless, bed-tossed night I might have held to some grain of hope, the next day would have dispelled them forever had I been at the Bookman house.
Another tradesman's wagon. What can it be now?
I can't wait to see. Oh, Uncle, did you ever see such riches?
Never.
Look at this scarlet domino. How could he know it would be just the right length? Feel the richness of the velvet. And trimmed in white ermine, even to the hood.
Oh, I'd love to paint you in that. The hood framing your face. You're all beauty.
What woman would not be in such a cloak? If only Mynheer Vanderhausen...
Hush, hush. Leave his appearance alone. You'll soon accustom yourself to it.
Slippers in every color. A casket of jewels fit for an empress. This white pure silk for my wedding gown. And the lace for my veil and train. Oh, Uncle, was any man ever so generous?
Only the beginning, Rose. Whatever doubts I might have had, I think I've chosen your future well.
And I too, dear Uncle. I will put Godfrey from my mind. In fact, he is already fading. Look at this necklace. This emerald pin. Oh, thanks to you, dear Uncle. I may be the luckiest girl in the world.
And so, 1 week later, I had to swallow my pride and watch my repulsive rival carry off my beloved Rose in solemn pomp in a carriage and four out of my life to Rotterdam. But I was mistaken. Rose Veldekast, now Rose Vanderhausen, was not out of my life yet.
And I brought you home, my boy, to sup with me because I'm worried. And I've no one else to turn to.
You may always count on me, Master.
In all things, I know. In particular, this one. Contrary to all promises freely exchanged, it's 4 months since I've heard of my niece. Not one word. I'm too old to travel. Will you then be my emissary and take this letter to the Boehm Key to inquire after my niece?
If you desire me to.
I do. You shall stay the night and take the coach for Rotterdam on the morn. I will issue you such funds as you need, and I pray you return post-haste with what word of comfort you can bring me.
I will waste no time. I promise you. I left not a house in the Boehm Key untried, Master, but no one had ever heard of Mynheer Vanderhausen.
Well, then where is my niece?
I cannot tell. One thing I did when I returned to Amsterdam, I went to the establishment from which the coach and four was hired to take Rose and her bridegroom to Rotterdam.
It's clever of you. And yes?
The driver reported that late in the evening, before they entered the city, a small party of men, dressed in the old fashioned, with
peaked beards and pointed mustaches, standing in the center of the road, stopped the coach.
Highway robbers?
Apparently not. Mynheer Vanderhausen seemed to have expected them, and he handed Rose down from the carriage and into an ornate, hand-carved but ancient litter, which the men lifted and bore off into the night.
The driver making no attempt to stop them?
No, since there was threat of force. All was as if it had been arranged, except...
Except what?
Except that Rose was weeping bitterly.
Oh, dear Lord. What have I done? What can I do to reach her or help her? Jacob has already retired. See who that is, boy.
At once, master. Rose!
Oh.
Dearest Rose, what is it?
Wine! Wine, quickly, or I am lost.
Master, she is distraught.
Oh, Rose, my dearest, here. Here, drink.
Now, food. Please, God, at once, or I perish.
I'll cut some meat.
Give it all to me. Send for a priest with all haste. Or in spite of all, I am not safe until he comes. Send for him speedily, or I am lost forever. The dead and the living can never be one. God has forbid it.
Up the stairs, quickly, Father. She is in terrible straits.
Help me! Forgive me! No! He's here! Godfrey, draw your sword! Protect me!
Where, Rose? Where?
There! In the anteroom with you! And the priest!
Stand aside, Father. Hold the lamp high. Let me see in the shadows.
Not leave my bedside.
Only to bring you the priest. Don't be afraid. Father Dalsa, myself, and Godfrey are only a few steps from your bed.
Oh, God, help me, whom I have no right to ask. The candle is out. It is too late. He has come for me.
Don't leave her alone in there.
The door. I can't budge it.
We will break it down.
No. Help, no, Godfrey. No.
She's not in the bed. Hold the lamp higher. She's not in the room.
The window. Could she have jumped or fallen?
They're shut fast. The latch is still thrown. There.
Can you see anything?
The street is empty. The canal is smooth as glass. She's gone. Rose is gone. As if she'd never returned.
The days that followed are shady and insubstantial in my mind. Half crazed with grief and at Herr Buchmann's remorseful request, I returned to Rotterdam, to the chapel of St. Anthony, where Vanderhausen had first seen Rose. It was after evening vespers, and I was travel-worn and soul-weary. When the worshippers left, I remained alone in the church, and I must have fallen asleep. I was awakened by a soft touch on my shoulder and awakened to see Rose. Rose.
Shh. I want you to forget me, Godfrey, and know that I am content and free from sin at last. Come with me.
She led me by the hand, a lamp in her hand, down a flight of steps into the vaults below. The music faded, and there was only the sound of our footsteps echoing on the stone. Where are you taking me?
To where I have found rest. Enter.
The room was a bedroom, richly furnished. Its main feature, a great four-poster bed, the curtains drawn. She crossed to them, smiling, and said,
"You see, we are united at last, my husband and I."
Sitting bolt upright on the bed, held in its position by the pillows, was Mynheer Vanderhausen. The costume I recognized, the face, what was left of it, was still livid as I had first seen it. But by now the bones showed through the decayed flesh. The hands were little more than the claws of a skeleton. Exhausted as I was, overcome by emotion, The room suddenly swayed, and I lost consciousness.
I was found the following morning by the sexton. The room in which I lay was the same, except that all the furnishings were gone, save one. In the place of the four-poster bed was nothing but a large and ornate coffin. I rubbed the dust from the nameplate, which read, Mynheer Winkle Vanderhausen, 1606 to 1669. The man had been dead long before Rose Velderkaust or myself were born. Her uncle and I allowed her to marry herself to a corpse.
A sad and terrifying story, not calculated to make sleep any easier tonight, and yet a fascinating and absorbing one. As all of us are drawn irresistibly to the macabre. Besides, of course, it wasn't true. Or was it? To Godfrey Shalkin's dying day, it was for him. So, who is to say that it couldn't have happened? Not I. As I said in the beginning, you make your own judgment. I'll be back shortly.
I can't find a decent job. I mean, it's not like I haven't tried. There must be somebody who wants me, but I can't find him.
In this entire city, now, there must be one person I can hire with the qualifications I'm looking for. Well, why can't I find him?
There's a fast, modern employment service bringing people and jobs together. Job service. Last year, we filled over 4 million jobs. In 40 years, we've never charged a fee. We use computers, personal interviews, anything that puts the right person in the right job. If you don't have a job, or you're in the wrong job, or you're looking for someone to do a job, call Job Service, or you may never find each other.
We're working to get people working. Job for people, people for jobs.
For Job Service, contact your state employment service. A message on behalf of the U.S. Department of Labor. Shalkin became a kind of living corpse who lived only through his paintings. But in spite of his success, he was recluse enough to insist on mixing his own pigments, which, alas, were not stable enough to stand the wear of time. So only the one canvas I mentioned remains. They say because he used his own blood to dilute the pigment. I don't know. There's no proof. It's just a part of the legend. Our cast included Don Scardino, Roberta Maxwell, Guy Sorrell, and Arnold Moss. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
Marvelous how you can get around when you've got no body, isn't it?
See him? Little white dog, curly tail.
Oh, silly little thing.
And see that big blue station wagon? It's going to hit him.
Got him, Cynthia. I've saved him.
He'll probably get run over anyhow one of these days.
No, he won't. No, he won't. I'm going to keep my eye on him.
What about all the others?
Them too. And cats and people and everybody. Oh, Cynthia, why did it take me so long to find out what I was born to do? I could have spent my whole life doing this. Cynthia, my afterlife is going to be 100 times more exciting than my life ever was.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, Brewers of Budweiser, and Buick Motor Division. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Thank you.
Bright and beautiful music comes your way from midnight to 6. World and national news on the hour with CBS. Alan Archer has local news. From KOIN in Portland, my name's Bill Garrity. Have a good night tonight and a better day tomorrow and a lovely weekend. Bye-bye. It's 12 midnight.
CBS News. South Vietnam's president has offered to quit and turn over power to a man who might be able to negotiate a peaceful outcome of the war with the communists. This is Doug Poling reporting on the CBS radio network. President Tran Van Wong made a speech Saturday morning saying he is willing to turn over power to General Duong Van Minh if the National Assembly takes a formal vote that this should be done. Minh is a longtime advocate of conciliation with the communists, who have hinted he would be acceptable to them. The North Vietnamese and Viet Cong have made it clear they intend to attack the city unless their conditions are met. More from Ed Bradley in Saigon.
The Viet Cong say they are willing to negotiate, but only after a total withdrawal of official American personnel and the installation of a new government in Saigon that does not include people they say are part of the Nguyen Van Thieu clique. At their weekly news conference, Viet Cong Colonel Zodan Jang said President Ford has not merely changed his policy, but has merely changed his horse, a reference to the new President Hung. Colonel Jang said the struggle of the South Vietnamese people is getting better every day as the American policy of backing the Thieu clique is facing total collapse. He indicated the Viet Cong will attack Saigon if their demands for negotiations are not met, although he declined to set any time frame. In Bradley, CBS News, Saigon.
CBS News continues in a moment.
Hi, world. Danny Brackett here with the king of the commissary, Mike Roy. A few words about what we're going to do on the cook thing come tomorrow over CBS.
We're going to be broiling scampi. That's shrimp.
Mm.
Now, the shrimp is delightful, delicious, and expensive.
Oh.
But we saved enough all week, we can afford the shrimp.
That's right. We had a poor guy's chowder and the mold and all. Yeah. Sure.
But I want you to know, of all the creatures in the sea, the shrimp is the ugliest. But it's good.
Tune in tomorrow and watch Mike Roy make shrimp beautiful on CBS.
Don?
Hey, what's all the crying about?
I just want the baby to be born all right.
Oh, hey, it'll be all right. You've been taking good care of yourself. I know.
The time to worry about your first pregnancy is long before it happens, when your body is preparing itself for what it will have to go through. Find out what your body needs before you become pregnant. Write for the book, Food is More Than Just Something to Eat. Write Nutrition, Pueblo, Colorado, 81009.
Hey, why are you crying?
Because I'm so happy. That's silly.
A public service message of this station and the Advertising Council.
The Senate on Friday gave President Ford limited authority to use American troops to help South Vietnam with the evacuation. Several senators said the U.S. government is moving too slowly to get the remaining Americans out of South Vietnam. The administration said Friday that 1,300 Americans were still there. The airlift of Vietnamese refugees to Guam has been suspended for 24 hours. U.S. officials on Guam saying they need time to prepare for more arrivals. In Guam, Colonel Jinks McCain, commander of the U.S. Marine Barracks, describes conditions there.
It is crowded, and I'm not sure it's crowded to some people's standards, but it's crowded to our standards. This is a temporary thing. They're going to be here how long, I don't know, but it's a temporary thing. We're trying to get people processed and get out of here as quick as possible.
There are more than 20,000 refugees and American evacuees on Guam living in tents being erected by U.S. Marines and sailors. Several sources have confirmed that former President Nguyen Van Thieu of South Vietnam, who resigned Monday, has fled to nationalist China. It's reported that Thieu, a party of 15 others, and 10 tons of baggage arrived Saturday morning in Formosa aboard a U.S. plane. A 43-year-old Richmond, Virginia man who said he wanted to see Fidel Castro hijacked a United Airlines plane flying near Washington, D.C. Friday night and tried to take it to Cuba. The hijacker, Francis Covey, was arrested by FBI agents when the plane landed in Atlanta. Covey said he had a bomb, but he was not armed and no explosives were found. Several passengers claim Covey was drunk when he boarded the plane. The United jetliner was on a flight from Raleigh, North Carolina to Newark, New Jersey. President Ford Friday night came out in favor of mandatory prison terms for all those convicted of violent crime. The president spoke at the Yale University Law School. Now this.
Blind and able to compete? Well, we're here to tell you. There are lots of us all over the country. We're blind, but we're just like you.
I work in the dark room at St. John Hospital. I'm running x-ray films, which have been taken in the rooms and then passed through the pass boxes to me. And then I run the films through the Eximat, where I refill the cassettes and put them back in the pass boxes for the technicians to reuse. We have had several trying cases through our lifespan, actually, and cases of discrimination. And when we finally found out about the National Federation of the Blind, we joined it immediately. It's the meaning of going straight ahead and being yourself.
For further information, get in touch with your local affiliate of the National Federation of the Blind, or contact me, Kenneth Jernigan, President, National Federation of the Blind, 218 Randolph Hotel Building, Des Moines, Iowa, 50309. This message presented as a public service by this station and the members of the National Federation of the Blind.
American firms are not the only ones feeling the pinch of lower profits due to the economic slump. Volkswagen, the big West German auto complex, reports it lost $232 million last year. Because of the losses, the company will eliminate dividend payments to its stockholders. VW officials attribute their losses to a slump in exports, which account for 70% of the firm's business. Doug Poling, CBS News.
In the Northwest, the Forest Service has closed off parts of Mount Baker in Washington to the public because the peak's unusual volcanic activity has increased the danger of avalanches. The closure involves Sherman Crater at the summit, Boulder Glacier below the crater, Boulder Creek Watershed, and Boulder Campground. Eugene police believe two young men held up two West Eugene businesses and stole a car during a 45-minute mini-crime spree Friday afternoon. Descriptions given of the gunmen who robbed the Household Finance Corporation office and obtained about $100 and took an undisclosed amount from the Western Beverage Company appear to be of the same men. Between the holdups, an automobile was stolen from a car lot in the area and later recovered. The men are still being sought. The Washington House and Senate are running out of money with which to do their business. So they're rushing to complete action on a bill to appropriate more than $13 million for legislative expenses. The Senate approved the bill Friday, and speedy action is expected in the House, where a lack of money is threatening operations. Oregon State Fisheries Director Dr. Gene Cruz has joined Governor Bob Straub in expressing dismay over a proposed California legislative bill on the coho salmon trolling season. Cruz says that the bill to change the season from June 1st to May 15th would allow California commercial fishermen to enter a coho fishery over 1 month earlier than Washington and Oregon fishermen. Cruz notes that most California commercial fishing regulations, including seasons, are currently set by the legislature, while Oregon and Washington seasons are set by the managing state agencies. He says it's time that politics were set aside and resource management was placed in the hands of trained scientists so that they can truly coordinate management of Pacific Coast migratory stock. Former Washington State Senator Perry Woodall of Toppenish has died in a Yakima hospital at age 62. Woodall died Friday from the effects of a stroke suffered earlier in the week at his home. Woodall was elected to the House in 1938 and remained there until 1951, except for 1945, when he was in the service. He was appointed to the Senate in 1956, served there until he decided not to seek re-election last year. More than half of the state Senate has indicated it will attend the funeral for the Republican on Tuesday. 40-year-old Alfred Ray Sweet of Eugene was arraigned Friday and bail set at $30,000 on an attempted murder charge in the shooting death of his estranged wife, 28-year-old Elkie Sweet of Hubbard. She's listed in serious but stable condition at a Eugene hospital after being wounded three times at Sweet's residence Thursday. Sweet is scheduled to reappear in court for a preliminary hearing on May 2nd. Weather forecast for the Portland metropolitan area, mostly sunny today, increasing clouds tonight. It'll be mostly cloudy tomorrow, Sunday. Highs 60 to 65 today and in the upper 50s on Sunday. Low tonight near 40, winds west 5 to 10 miles per hour today. Chance of measurable rain 10% today and tonight. At the airport currently, there are scattered clouds. The temperature is 44 degrees, relative humidity 73%. Wind from the southwest at 3 miles per hour, and the barometric pressure 30.19 and rising. The temperature in downtown Portland currently 46 degrees. That's KOIN AM-FM News at 1209. This is Alan Archer.